This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety. Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 72. Welcome back to the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm your host, Sean from NC Gunblog, and with me today is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
Barry White is back, baby.
All right. Well, let's get started with a tactical dog and fitness report. 19.3 dog walking miles this week, and MapMyWalk tells me that in 2015, Dysus and I walked 1,432.37 miles.
Yeah, I probably walked 1,432 feet.
No, you're probably gone farther than that. So I'm still enjoying going to the spin classes at the gym. Not enjoying the fact that there are soon to be more people wanting into the class than there are bikes in the class. But that'll last a couple of months and then they'll all get tired and go home and stop bugging me.
Gyms are pretty much insufferable until about March 1st.
Is that how it goes?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, as you can tell from the Barry White action, again, I've been mostly coughing up a lung every morning rather than getting on the treadmill. And no, I haven't been to the doctor because I don't want to pay $80 after insurance for them to tell me that there's nothing they can do. Thanks, Obamacare.
I think you need a better doctor.
Well, maybe.
And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. This week, Aaron's going to talk about managing chronic pain after a disaster.
Come on, every pony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Aaron Paulette!
Hey, Aaron, how are you today?
Well, I'm feeling pretty good today, thanks, but for the past 2 days, I've been dealing with headaches and other forms of chronic discomfort, which leads me to today's topic. In the here and now, if you feel like crud, you can just take a painkiller and go to bed. But after a disaster, you may not have that luxury. So here are a list of items that every prepper needs in their bug-out bags to take the edge off of chronic pain, be it from migraines or kidney stones or arthritis. The first thing you're going to need is a strong painkiller. If you have a prescription for an opioid like Demerol or oxycodone, then you need to keep that filled at all times. But not everyone has access to that sort of thing. If you don't, then I recommend ketoprofen, which can be bought over the counter via the link in the show notes. Now, I have a friend who suffers from both chronic migraines and chronic kidney stones. Ouch, by the way.
Yeah.
And he swears by it. He says it's the best over-the-counter painkiller he's found, and that some studies rate it better than opioids. So I take his word for it. He seems to be a connoisseur of painkillers based on what he has to suffer. However, if all you have is traditional painkillers, then you should carry a mix of ibuprofen, such as Advil, naproxen, such as Aleve, and acetaminophen, such as Tylenol. Varying these will keep your body from building up a tolerance to a specific type, and that means they will be more effective when you need to take them. Be advised that you can combine some forms of painkillers. For example, you can take a Tylenol if you aren't getting adequate relief from Aleve or Advil, but do not combine Advil and Aleve. Because they are chemically similar, you double the side effects and your chances for an adverse reaction, which can include liver damage. Aside from drugs, there are other things which you can do to make chronic pain sufferers more comfortable. Most people with migraines say that bright lights and loud noises bring them pain, which is why we like to retreat to a dark and quiet bedroom to recover. But such a thing may not be possible after a disaster. For example, just try to find a quiet and dark place to rest in a FEMA shelter or a refugee camp. In this case, soft earplugs will go a long way towards creating a quiet environment, and a bandana or chamag folded flat and tied around the head like a blindfold will help keep light out. Bandanas and chamogs can also be used to create compresses. Soaking the cloth in cold water and placing it on the forehead or on the neck will help with fevers or high blood pressure from headaches. Placing the cloth in hot but not boiling water will create a hot compress that can soothe muscle aches and joint pains. Speaking of joint pains, any ointment that you use regularly, like Bengay, should be in your pack as well. Finally, some really bad headaches bring intense skin sensitivity, making it feel like everything you touch is made of sandpaper. If you're one of those unfortunate people, consider getting a set of silk thermal underwear to keep in the pack. It's not going to fix anything, but wearing it might help you relax long enough for the painkillers to kick in.
Well, thanks, Aaron. I hope you feel better soon, and I'll see you again next week.
Thanks, Sean. You take care.
If you'd like to read more from Aaron, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com.
Felons behaving badly. Dateline, Gaston County, North Carolina. The North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation has taken over an investigation into an officer-involved shooting that occurred early Tuesday afternoon in Gaston County. In a press conference Tuesday afternoon, the Dallas Police Department said the incident began after reports of fraudulent checks being passed at an English grocery in Dallas. When police arrived, they arrested two people, and a third suspect fled the scene, authorities say, and a pursuit ensued. Police identified the two arrested individuals as Suspect 1 and Suspect 2. At some point during the pursuit, Suspect 3 crashed and then struck the officer's patrol car. The officer returned fire, and as the officials pointed out in a press conference, a vehicle in North Carolina is considered a dangerous weapon. The suspect continued to drive but crashed a second time, approximately 1 mile north of Hardin Road on Highway 321. Suspect 3 was found unresponsive in the vehicle after the officer's gunshot and was later pronounced deceased on the scene. "We have video footage that has been turned over to the SBI," said Dallas Police Chief Gary Buckner. The medical office will make a final determination on the suspect cause of death, but a spokesperson with the SBI did say there were visible gunshot wounds on the body.
He died from a toothache.
Well, no, it is possible that he was killed in the car crash because he crashed into a tree and died because of crashing into a tree.
Yeah, there's that.
But he was shot. They did have visible gunshot wounds on him, but it didn't say that the bullet killed him.
That is true.
Could have died from crashing into a tree.
While we're talking about semantics, the officer returned fire. I think they mean the officer opened fire.
You're probably right there.
Yeah.
So what sort of people pass checks, two of them get arrested, one of them runs from the cops and then like runs into the cops and gets shot for his troubles?
Boy Scouts.
Yes, yes, yes. Suspect 1, assault on a female, misdemeanor class A1, DWI level 3, misdemeanor non-class code, DWI level 1, misdemeanor non-class code, robbery with a dangerous weapon, felon, pre-fair felons act. Suspect 2, hit and run, misdemeanor class 1, speeding to elude arrest or attempted, felon class H, common law robbery attempted, felon class H, receiving stolen vehicle, felon class H. Suspect number 3, unauthorized use of a motor conveyance, misdemeanor class 1, forgery, felon class I, uttering forged papers, felon class I, worthless checks over $2,000, felon class I.
This is my shocked face.
This week on Foreign Policy for Grownups, Nikki talks about how she sees Russia sliding back into being something like the old Soviet Union. Nikki, you've talked a lot during the last year about our relations with Russia, Russia's turn towards authoritarianism, why Putin may or may not do what he does. Now that you look back over the last year, what sort of trend do you see?
Well, frankly, I'm seeing Russia slide back into USSR mode. Look, Russia has never been particularly free. We've talked about its continued view that the United States is its primary national security threat, despite that reset button Hillary tried to present to Putin, despite the notional cooperation in Afghanistan, despite Russia's efforts to become a democracy, sort of. But what we've seen over 2015 overall is propaganda, control, outright statism, ratcheted up to a level we haven't seen since the old USSR days. Since Russia's annexation of Crimea back in 2014, the United States and Europe have imposed economic sanctions on Russia, its certain government officials, some economic sectors, etc., as a way of pressuring Russia to stop its shenanigans in Ukraine and changing Putin's plans. But I think we've miscalculated just how determined Putin is to be the head of a new resurgent superpower, and just how much his authoritarian appeal has mesmerized Russians, who are obviously disillusioned with events since the fall of the wall in 1990. The level of propaganda has been ratcheted to unprecedented levels since the fall of the Soviet Union. The people think they're winning, even as the economy is swirling the drain. In 2014, they were all proud of themselves because of the Sochi Olympics and the fact that they quote-unquote got Crimea back. Food from the EU is being burned essentially in front of their faces this year, and even as they borderline starve. Why? Because Putin-controlled media is constantly hammering the message that they're this great power again. In August, a Russian rag called Komsomolskaya Pravda released what the Russians claimed was a recording between two CIA agents discussing plans to down a passenger airliner over Ukraine. Sound familiar? This was supposed to have been proof that somehow Americans were responsible for the downing of MH17. Except the production value was so bad that if you actually listen to the recording, you can't help but crack up. Foreign Policy magazine at the time took the recording between the two supposed CIA agents apart pretty well. They said, one sounds British for half the recording until he switches to a more American accent. The other man does his best to hide his Russian accent, but it pops up at the beginning as he clumsily asks his co-conspirator, how are the preparations? But the most glaring hole is in the conversation itself. The men do not talk with each other like native English speakers and use turns of phrase that sound as if their dialogue was translated to English from Russian via Google Translate. Before signing off, the two say luck to one another, a common farewell in Russian. But I guarantee you there are Russians out there who believe this. Other Russian propaganda is much more sophisticated. The Kremlin continues to pour money into RT, the Russian television outlet that targets foreign audiences and spreads pro-Russian propaganda. The recent gala marking RT's 10-year anniversary included such dignitaries as Putin himself, as well as a familiar face in U.S. conservative commentary, retired General Michael Flynn, the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. It's amazing to me that a retired three-star would allow himself to be used as a propaganda tool by what is commonly known as KGB TV. But Flynn is bitter about being forced to retire early from the DIA after turning that agency into a burning dumpster fire. So he's been a staple on every conservative talk show bashing the current administration. This is just another way of poking a thumb in Obama's eye. Now, I have no problem with leveling criticism at the current administration. I've done so more than once myself. That said, allowing himself to be used as a propaganda tool by RT and telegraphing the Kremlin's message to the world while sitting at the head table with Putin at the RT gala? This guy. He makes me wonder just where his allegiance lies.
Well, yeah, we've always known that propaganda was bad in Russia. What else makes you think that Russia is heading back to the Soviet Union days?
Well, there's their economic policies. I read in the Russian newspaper Vedomosti recently that Russia has implemented new currency exchange rules, ostensibly to fight money laundering. The central bank is implementing strict new controls, basically giving people an anal probe if they try to exchange more than roughly $200 in rubles. They'll have to present an entire litany of personal data in order to do the exchange. They're, of course, doing it under the guise of fighting terrorism as well. In September, presidential advisor Sergei Glazev was asked to present an economic strategy for 2016 that's quite separate from the one the Minister of Finance, Anton Sulyanov, is supposed to be developing. Glazev is a notorious nationalist who founded or is a member of numerous Russian nationalist political parties, orthodox groups, and patriotic social clubs. Last year, he was one of the loudest voices in Russia in favor of Russian intervention during the pro-West Ukrainian uprisings that led to government change in Kyiv, and his economic plans for Russia pretty much reflect his nationalist ideology. Glazev proposed a radical overhaul of the economy in 2016, including several policies that would mostly cut Russia's financial and economic ties to the West. They would prohibit Russian entities from using foreign currency, tax the conversion of rubles to foreign currencies, ban foreign loans to Russian firms, and require Russian firms that have loans from the West to default on their payments. I think Glazev is nationalistically convinced that Russia's economy doesn't need the West, and he's prepared to let the West know that Russia will weather any storm, even if the West increases sanctions pressure.
Sounds like Russia is creating this boogeyman of the West. The West is to blame for their problems. They are the enemy, and Russia is strong and will stand up to that foe.
Russian folklore talks about these brave fighters, these knights. They're called bogatyri. They're heroes that courageously face the enemy and never give up the battle for good. In a way, I think this is the image Russia wants to foment. The image of the brave Superman with his cape blowing in the wind, a cape that incidentally has a red hammer and sickle on it, standing up to the evil West, standing up in defiance of evil. And that's the image that allows Putin and his cronies to severely curtail Russians' rights and freedoms. They're willing to give up their rights for the glory of Mother Russia. Under the guise of protecting children and fighting terrorism, the Russian government has passed laws that gave it the ability to selectively block websites and prosecute their owners. Incidentally, isn't that similar to what Trump has said he wanted to do? Is it any wonder, as I said last week, that Putin has become Trump's biggest supporter? Putin's administration frequently abuses the legislation to block criticism of the federal government, silencing those who challenge their nationalistic narrative. Remember a guy named Mikhail Khodorkovsky? He's a former oil tycoon and Putin critic that spent more than 10 years in prison before being issued a pardon by Putin a couple of years ago. Well, guess who just got an international warrant issued for his arrest again? Khodorkovsky, who has been living in Switzerland and has been vocally criticizing Putin, is now wanted for allegedly ordering subordinates to kill the mayor of Nefteyugansk in 1998. Russia's investigative committee says he was attempting to avoid paying taxes for his oil company, Yukos. Right. In Russia, everything old seems new again. The propaganda, the media control, the persecution of opposition, economic controls. I think 2016 is going to be an interesting year.
All right, Nikki. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com.
Plug of the week.
I got, as a stocking stuffer, this really cool little like $11 light. It's called the Clip Light Clip Strip. And this thing is brighter than the shop light that I've been using for like the last 5 or 6 years.
Right. And I imagine you use some shop lights.
I use some shop lights because I have an 18-year-old car.
No, you don't. You have a project that you drive to work.
I have a rolling rebuild, yeah.
So tell me about this shop light, not shop light, clip strip thing.
Well, it's about the size of a pen. It takes 3 AAA batteries and is brighter than the sun. No, I'm kidding. It's 140 lumens, which is pretty bright.
Now, the flashlight I use for work is only an 80 lumen flashlight. And the flashlight, my tactical in my pocket everyday carry flashlight is a 300 lumen flashlight. So 140 lumens is pretty bright.
And I believe that it's 140 lumens. I don't think that it's one of these, oh, look, we have a single LED flashlight and it's 2000 lumens because we say so. No, I really think it's 140 lumens. It's really, really bright. In fact, last night, my wife came out to the garage while I was working and I was like, hey, watch this. And turned out the lights, turned on my shop light, turned it off, turned on the clip light, and she goes, damn! It was pretty bright. The bad news is, of course, it, you know, running on 3 little AAA batteries, it, you can't leave it on all the time.
Right, but, AAA batteries, you can get down to the store.
Yeah, yeah. I would probably put lithiums in it. It comes with some, regular alkalines. But this thing is going to live in my glove box so that if...
When
I need to replace a sensor on the side of the road, I have this thing. I mean, it is... I can't say nice enough things about this, and it's $11.
$11.48 currently, free shipping, Prime, on Amazon. Link is in the show notes. So, yeah, and it looks like it'll clip to anything. Clip to your pocket, clip to the visor in your car.
Yeah, yeah, and the clip is also magnetic.
So, clip to your hood.
Yeah.
Which might come in handy.
Maybe.
For somebody who has a project that he drives to and from work.
Well, to be fair, I won't need it for under the hood because I've got pre-installed LED lights under the hood just for that occasion.
Oh, well, that's probably wise.
I did that over the summer.
For those occasions when the battery works too.
Right. I got a really nice battery.
Excellent.
It should be okay.
Excellent. Ask me how I know about batteries. That's what I did 2 days ago.
Oh, nice.
Well, returning this week is our special guest, Benjamin Turner of the Personal Defense Podcast, who reminds us that a fight avoided is a fight won. Benjamin Turner is the co-host of the Personal Defense Talk Podcast, along with Evan Carson. Ben is a Northern Virginia-based defensive firearms instructor, multi-discipline NRA instructor, defensive firearms coach through ICE training, and an ALIS certified trainer. Ben is also a veteran of the United States Marine Corps, having spent 6 years in the infantry. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Good to see you again, Sean. I'm happy to be back on the show.
Last time you came on the show, episode 61, to talk about ALIS training, you signed off with a Personal Defense Talk podcast tagline, avoid, de-escalate, respond. Most gun schools are the respond part. Pulling out your gun and putting holes in a cardboard target's a lot of fun, but isn't avoiding the gunfight in the first place a whole lot better solution?
It is, and it's one of the things that we talk a lot about in our classes. The old adage goes, a fight avoided is a fight won, and as corny as that may sound, it's true. When we break it down at the end of the day, the only thing people really want to do is go home safely to our loved ones. So if I can do things to avoid getting into any type of altercation, I'll do it.
So as a responsible concealed carrier, what are my top 5 strategies for avoiding a bad situation where I would have to defend myself or my family?
I think the first thing is just have a general sense of awareness. The gun guys get a whole lot into that whole, I'm always aware and I'm super vigilant. And we're not talking about that. It's not this super hyper-focused urban operator type of awareness, but just a good sense of your surroundings. Anecdotal stories. We just passed Christmas. I was out doing some Christmas shopping. There was a parking spot next to like a big box van.
Mm-hmm.
I avoided that parking spot altogether because there was no way I could see coming out of the store, see my vehicle behind that box van. So I parked somewhere else. It's a simple illustration of just avoiding a possible situation.
Okay.
Everybody gets so hyped up on this awareness thing. It's just be aware. Just if you're just looking around, scanning surroundings, a lot of what you're doing is deselecting yourself. The violent criminal attacker isn't going to attack you if you deselect yourself by just looking around. No, if you happen to notice them, they're going to say, okay, this person's aware. We really can't take them by surprise. Just little things like that will help you with your awareness. Another key thing is to just avoid dangerous places and people. A lot of people phrase it as listening to your gut. Just pay attention. Like if I see somebody that looks like they're in a biker gang, is flying some type of colors on the back of their vest, I'm probably not going to try to interact with that person because I don't know them. I don't know what they're into. And if they just make me feel funny, I'm going to avoid it.
So the rule of the stupids, don't go to stupid places with stupid people and do stupid things at stupid times?
It helps a lot.
Wait, you mean do the stuff my mom told me when I was a kid?
Yeah, it really falls back on to listening to mom, doesn't it? Avoid dangerous places. We have a pool hall that's near my house. I love shooting pool. I don't go there any longer because there's been about 4 or 5 drug busts, maybe 3 or 4 different fights there, alcohol-related incidences there. So I just avoid the place altogether. And by avoiding that place, yeah, I may not be able to have as much fun or enjoy myself playing billiards, but guess what? I'm also not in some type of violent altercation at the same time. The third thing is pre-contact cues. The pre-contact cues are when you're approached by somebody. You're basically scanning them, watching their habits or what their actions are. One of the pre-contact cues is picking. So if you see them picking like an area on their body, it's a potential giveaway that they're carrying some type of weapon or some type of device or something in that area, be it a knife, be it a gun, or some other thing that they may be able to assault you with. Another big one is scanning their surroundings. So if you see someone, they're shifty-eyed, they're moving their head all around, they're either checking to make sure that you're not with somebody or that you're alone, maybe checking to see if the law enforcement are around, or checking to see if their buddy's in position for you yet. Another one is if they try to keep getting in closer and invading your personal space. You always want to interact with somebody. You know, I like to keep it at least 2 arms distance, 3 or 4 feet away from me. If somebody comes up to me, just, hey, stop right there, you know, making me a little uncomfortable. And you have to have some type of verbal skills to do that. That leads more into like our second phrase that we sign off with, de-escalation, but it also helps inside of the avoidance thing as well. A great class for this is with Craig Douglas of ShivWorks, and it's his Extreme Close Quarters Concepts course. You can look him up on ShivWorks.com for his training schedule.
Craig Douglas, Southnark, right?
Southnark, yep.
Excellent. I've been thinking about taking that class ever since you and Evan talked about taking his class on your podcast.
It's a heck of a course. You'll learn a lot, and it's humbling all the way around. And Craig's a hell of a dude, too. A lot of fun to be with.
Excellent.
Another big one that I think really helps, it's part avoid, part de-escalate, and that's just checking your ego at the door. How many times have you driven into the parking lot, you're going to have to get into a parking spot, and somebody steals it from you, and it becomes a big deal? Or you've stolen the parking space from somebody else, and now they're getting out of the car. You don't know what type of day they had. They're yelling and screaming at you. How easy is it to defuse the situation by just, sorry, dude, my bad, I messed up. And hell, I've had that situation. I've even offered to move my car and let him have the spot just so I could avoid any type of confrontation.
Rory Miller talks about that in his book, Facing Violence. He calls it a monkey dance, where you're not really fighting over the thing you're fighting over. You're fighting over who's going to be the dominant monkey.
I learned it a long time ago from with my grandfather, and he parted this, you know, this Southern knowledge onto me. And it's to really paraphrase it, to keep it clean for your show, it's whose ego is bigger than the others.
Whose ego? Yes, yes.
You check the ego at the door, and how many of these situations that we read about, we see about on the news and everything else, would never have happened by one person saying, my bad, my messed up, here you go.
Okay.
And the fifth thing I think is really important to remember. I learned this from a prior instructor development course that I attended. The instructor told us to remember that every altercation you get into, if you're armed, is automatically an armed encounter, because we're introducing the gun to the situation. It may not be an armed encounter in the general sense of the word, like no one's pulling a gun out, but it's an armed encounter because we've introduced the firearm that we're carrying. Is it really worth me getting into a fist fight with this guy over a parking spot that he now bumps into me, feels that I have a firearm, that he's now going to try and take from me and make it a hell of a lot worse than what it actually needed to be, where I could have just said, whoops, my bad, have the spot.
Exactly. All right, Ben. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again soon.
Sean, it was good to talk to you again. Hope to be back on soon. Remember, folks, avoid, de-escalate, and respond.
You can hear more from both Ben and Evan at personaldefensetalk.com, and you can, and probably should, subscribe to their podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Fun with headlines.
All right, so this one was actually so bad that they have now changed the headline to more accurately reflect what actually happened. I also suspect that the people who own the mall in question here had a nice little chat with the web producer. So here's the original headline. Police take two into custody for carjacking at Opry Mills.
Now, Opry Mills, what is Opry Mills?
So Opry Mills is a gigantic mall. It's one of those, they call them a Mills mall, that's like, I don't know, it's gigantic.
Not Mall of America size, but bigger than a regular mall.
Bigger than a regular mall, yes, but not Mall of America sized. We refer to it locally as Shopryland because it's where the old Opryland theme park used to be.
Okay.
It actually does occupy almost the entirety of the old Opryland space. It's pretty big. A stolen car was tracked to a busy Opry Mills on Saturday. Police told News 2 that after the carjacking occurred in North Nashville on Friday night, a company was able to track the car. Originally, it tracked the car to Hermitage and then to the Opry Mills parking lot. Police arrived at the mall just before 11:30 a.m. on Saturday. When officials approached the car, the suspects reportedly ran towards the mall. Two suspects, one of them a juvenile, are now in custody. Another suspect remains on the run.
So they didn't carjack anybody at Opry Mills.
Right. They recovered the car at Opry Mills. So now the new headline is, police take two into custody at Opry Mills in connection to North Nashville carjacking. So imagine you're the general manager of the mall, and the headline is, two arrested for carjacking at Opry Mills Mall.
Yes, this is technically true. Two were arrested at Opry Mills, but they didn't carjack anybody at Opry Mills.
Right. That just happens to be where the car was.
Yeah.
Good job, guys. Good job.
Did you know that people drive like idiots? Well, in his triumphant return, Barron tells us how $100 worth of dash camera may save your bacon when someone decides to blame his bad driving on you in
Tech Tips.
Tech Tips. Tech Tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech Tips with the Barron.
Barron, it's great to have you back.
It's great to be back, Sean.
So I saw on Facebook that you had a little incident where you were really happy you had a dash cam on your truck. What happened?
Well, thankfully, I didn't hit anybody, but let's just say I caught a bunch of stupidity right in action. So Seattle area traffic is bad enough. People will cut you off and otherwise do stupid crap on a regular basis. I'm fairly immune to being surprised, at least I thought so. Well, they say a new baby will change your life, and it does. I bought a fifth wheel so things will be more comfortable for mini-me during Boomer Shoot. Babies don't weigh much, but given all the other equipment I take with me for the event, the total rig weighs about 11 to 12 tons. Now, y'all remember Newton's laws, right? Most importantly, the one surrounding momentum and an object in motion remains in motion unless another force acts upon it. This means it takes a little bit of time to stop this giant thing. I try to be responsible and leave a good-sized following distance between me and the vehicle in front of me so that I can stop safely if I have to. Well, people seem to think that distance I have between me and another vehicle is so they can just whip right in and slam on their brakes. No, I'm not kidding. I've had numerous people speed up on an on-ramp and cut me off, slamming on their brakes while doing so, even with plenty of room still in front of them. Please note, I adhere to the rule of maintain my speed and let them pace me and merge in. There's no reason to slam on your brakes or do anything. So, my standing on the brakes and doing everything I can in the truck to stop what is basically 12 tons from crushing them. Barely. I guess that they're thinking that they can tell the cop that it's not their fault because I rear-ended them. Never mind that they created the problem by cutting me off in the first place. Not to mention the whole problem of being dead when 11 to 12 tons of angry Barnett Express flattens you on 405. So to cover my backside when I inevitably end up having to explain myself to the Washington State Patrol, I have a dash camera. I got the first one when I was having to go in and out of Seattle on a regular basis. Watching a guy cut across six lanes of 405 almost hitting three people made me realize how worthy of an investment it is. The first camera, though, was a dash cam through Dash Cam Diaries, and it wasn't cheap. It took mid-range HD video, but it did have two cameras, one on me and one on the road. A serious plus for when you have to get pulled over.
Why do I have a feeling there's a big but coming?
Because there is. It lasted literally about 6 months. 6 months, $250, boom, gone. The connector that they used was a mini USB connector, and after months of being plugged and unplugged, it finally started to break. The battery was showing wear and constant issues, and basically after 30 minutes of driving somewhere, it would die and reset itself and it wouldn't come back. Seriously, don't recommend it. I'm not going to even bother linking to Dashcam Diaries because they're no longer online. So take that as an additional clue of the quality.
And the replacement?
I'm not the only one who likes the idea of a dash cam, so much so that we were walking through Costco and saw a Cobra 840 Drive HD on sale for $100. Full HD video, 60 frames per second. Only a single camera, but you can always alter the position after you get pulled over. We've had them for 5 months and they're still rocking strong. I only have one complaint though, and that is the user interface isn't the best, especially with regards to unlocking files. While locking files is a benefit, it takes way too many clicks to unlock them and delete them to clear space off the card.
Locked files?
Okay, so like anything else, when you build something for a specific use, you build features for that use. Dash cams aren't like normal cameras. If they were, you might as well just use a GoPro, right?
Well, why not just use a GoPro if you already have one?
If you do, great, you can. But there are a few features that dash cams have that make them just work better as dash cams. One, GeForce locking. The file will be locked in the event the accelerometer sees a hard event, i.e. you just got hit or you slammed on your brakes. There's also a hazard button. Again, you can lock the file manually because you saw something that you want to preserve for later. Additionally, it supports auto-looping. So my newest Cobra will continue looping over the same disk, overwriting the oldest material first, but it won't overwrite the locked files. Auto-recording when powered on. So I plug it in, it immediately turns on, and it just starts recording. And lastly, GPS. Both my cameras watermarked video with date, time, location, and speed. This is extremely handy when it comes to defensive purposes and you were saying how fast you were going when it happened.
Well, that is a handy set. So you would recommend the Cobra 840 Drive HD?
Yep, and at $100, it's cheap insurance for when someone blows through a red light and says you were the one running it. Like a gun, I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Well, that's solid advice for most tools. All right, Baron. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org.
The J-Block. So I spent my Christmas vacation watching Netflix and being lazy.
Oh, to be childless.
Yeah, aside from gym visits, I guess.
Yeah.
Taking the dog for a walk.
Well, you know, that's good.
It's been raining like you wouldn't believe here. Oh my goodness.
I think we got that rain like 3 days before you did.
No, I don't think so. I mean, like, it's been bad here, like five inches of rain in the last week. I'm thinking about building an ark. It's been bad. Poor dog's going crazy. She's like, I don't get, you know, she didn't get to go out.
Right.
It's been horrendous. So I've been like going, my wife's going crazy. She's like, I need to get out of the house. Plus, you know, I tend to watch shows that she doesn't really like. One of the ones that she hasn't really liked much is Narcos.
I saw that.
You can understand why she didn't really like it?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. I really like the show. I think it's a really good show, and I think it's worth watching for two pretty good reasons. One, it's an entertaining and kind of sobering look at the effects of our, as a society's criminal behavior on the civil society of other countries. And two, it's a grim reminder of the fact of the sort of people that exist in this world. Our country's cocaine use caused the mess that happened in the 90s in Colombia. If our country wasn't using cocaine and sending billions of dollars into the hands of Pablo Escobar and letting him just bribe everybody and murder whoever the heck he felt like, then they wouldn't have been in a situation where this guy was basically destroying an entire country and killing thousands of people. That was pretty much on us. And as concealed carriers, we need to remember that that sort of person exists in this world. That is, there's a lot of people like that. Now, Pablo happened to be one that had a lot of money, but there are a lot of people in this world who you only exist to serve their purpose. You are either someone to give them money or someone to entertain them by doing whatever it is they're planning on doing. They're either going to get what they want from you financially, resource-wise, or they're going to get what they want from you entertainment-wise. So as a concealed carrier, this is why you carry a gun. So it's a good idea, I think, to watch a movie like that. It's actually a Netflix series. I think currently there's, 10 episodes. There's like one season. There's going to be a second season. It's already been ordered. So far, I think the first season, I'm like, I got one or two episodes left before the season's over, first season for me. In the first season, they got to the point where I think they've got him in prison, the prison that he built himself. Literally, they let him build his own prison and live in it.
Yeah, that was like, I had to go, wait, I'm sorry, is this artistic? No,
this really
Wikipedia
happened.
Wikipedia says that really happened.
Yes,
okay,
yes,
then.
It's crazy the way this went, but you watch this just to remind yourself that this sort of thing, this sort of person exists, and that you're going to have to possibly one day pull out your gun to stop that sort of person from hurting you and hurting your family. And if you'd like some more depth to the story, have you ever watched Black Hawk Down?
Yes, and read the book.
You watched the movie, you read the book?
Yeah.
Well, the guy that wrote the book, Mark Bowden, he wrote another book called Killing Pablo, and it is the story of the United States and Colombia chasing down Pablo Escobar. And I thought for a while that this story, this Narcos, was actually just, you know, Black Hawk Down, but, you know, the movie from his book, but it turns out it's not. So the director of Narcos also directed, back in Brazil, two movies called Elite Squad and Elite Squad: The Enemy Within, where he follows the semi-fictional accounts, the ripped from the headlines, stories of something called BOPE, B-O-P-E, which, being in Portuguese, I couldn't even begin to pronounce. But it's basically the Rio de Janeiro SWAT team from the military police. It's ridiculous. Whenever you hear people talk about the militarized police or the, like, police state, you need to watch these movies. Elite Squad is DVD only, but Elite Squad Enemy Within, which you really should see Elite Squad first before you watch The Enemy Within, they're on Netflix. Watch them. You ever want to see what a police state looks like, watch this, because it's like straight up, we just kill people. They think about maybe arresting people, but mostly it's like shoot first, ask questions later. And it's from a book that was written by two police captains from this BOPE thing and a sociologist who, it was pretty clear who the sociologist was in the movie.
Right.
And he's like really not down with that. Yeah. The particular person in the movie who is pretty much the guy who's writing the book. Not really friendly. Yeah, it's kind of hostile.
Maybe you shouldn't have this extrajudicial execution here.
From our perspective, as people who live in a relatively free, relatively peaceful, relatively we don't murder each other all that often society, though we act like we live in a violent society, it's a freaking war zone. Oh my goodness. So watch it, but don't watch it with your kids. Elite Squad, like I said, it's a DVD only on Netflix. Elite Squad Enemy Within is streaming, so... But don't do what I did and watch Enemy Within and then realize later that there is a prequel to it. They're really... Well, you know, Enemy Within is actually the second movie. It is in Portuguese, so you will have to read the movie, but it is absolutely worth it. And Killing Pablo and the movie and, you know, and the series Narcos... Definitely worth it. But watch Elite Squad. Watch Elite Squad Enemy Within. It's a different world out there. We live in an incredibly free, incredibly peaceful society. You need to see what the other world looks like. And now a word from our sponsor. You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs. Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put two in the ten ring, but have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say. What the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey. Or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state. And make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the donate or subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
So, you didn't watch the Democrat debate, and I didn't watch it either. That's because you knew Weird would watch it so none of us would have to. And it's time for another patented Weird Audio Fisk in This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery. So, hey, Weird, what do you got for me this week?
So the Democrats had a debate, and it was supposed to be about foreign policy, but gun control and Mrs. Clinton's bathroom habits came into it. I'll talk about the former, thanks.
Secretary Clinton, in the wake of the San Bernardino attack, you all emphasized gun control. But our latest poll shows that more Americans believe arming people, not stricter gun laws, is the best defense against terrorism. Are they wrong?
So this is a question from the moderator. I thought I'd lead with it as it really shows how the tide has turned. Used to be a mass shooting happened and the pro-gun people would bunker down and see what we could do to keep our rights from slipping away. Now, every time there's a mass shooting, the gun shop counters become packed and I'm still not able to buy more Polk 22 ammo. So what does Hillary think?
Guns in and of themselves, in my opinion, will not make Americans safer. We lose 33,000 people a year already to gun violence. Arming more people to do what I think is not the appropriate response to terrorism.
Little surprise here. First, she quotes the raw gun death numbers and falsely calls them gun violence. The bulk of those deaths are suicide, not violent crime. And of course she doesn't think guns will make us safer. Except our violent crime levels are at 50-year low. Their peak just happened to be when her husband was president. And this Black Friday was the highest number of NICS checks in the history of the NICS system. And did I mention you can't find any 22 ammo anymore? That's not us established gunnies buying it all up. That's new shooters and people training new shooters. Sorry, Ms. Clinton, but the facts don't support your opinion. How about Bernie Sanders?
It's a country in which people choose to buy guns. I think more than half of the people in my own state of Vermont, and I guess here in New Hampshire, are gun owners. That's the right of people. But this is what I do believe. I believe that when we have some 300 million guns in this country, I believe that when we have seen these horrific mass killings, not only in San Bernardino, but in Colorado and movie theaters in Colorado, I think we have got to bring together the vast majority of the people who do, in fact, believe in sensible gun safety regulations. For example, talking about polls, poll recently came out. Overwhelming majority of the American people say we should strengthen the instant background check. Who denies that it is crazy? Who denies that it is crazy to allow people to own guns who are criminals or are mentally unstable? We got to eliminate the gun show loophole. In my view, we have got to see that weapons designed by the military to kill people are not in the hands of civilians. I think there is a consensus.
Oh, poor conflicted Bernie. He's from a state that has virtually no gun control laws and a population where gun ownership is near ubiquitous and crime is extremely low. But he's a Democrat and allegedly running for president, so he needs to pay some lip service on gun control. He talks about this 90% poll where Americans and gun owners are in favor of universal background checks. The facts don't bear out. Bloomberg has tried in several states to implement universal background checks and failed. And in the states he succeeded, the law passed by a narrow margin. If 90% of the American people want universal background checks, they don't want it enough to go vote that way. Also, Bernie, nobody is denying that criminals and the mentally ill shouldn't get guns. That's even the law in your home state of Vermont, even with its lack of gun control laws. That's how federal laws work. Of course, the gun show loophole doesn't exist. Dealers do background checks at their shops or at the show, and private individuals can buy and sell guns within the law. No loophole. And never mind in California where San Bernardino happened, it's illegal to sell firearms privately. There's no loophole of any kind in California. California has every stupid law they can dream up, and it stopped nothing. And sorry, but this whole military style and conflating the made-up term assault weapon with the military term assault rifle is crap. The AR-15 is not a military weapon, nor is a semi-auto Wasser 10, nor is my Century Arms FAL. They look like military guns, but that's it. Hey, but we should take gun advice from the dude who obviously knows nothing about guns. So nobody cares what Martin O'Malley's opinion is, but he shared it anyway.
Governor, no, you know what, we have to abide by the rules here. We'll call on you here shortly, but I do want to pick up on something.
We actually passed comprehensive gun safety legislation with a ban on combat assault weapons, David.
Ooh, combat assault weapons. Is there a contest to see who can make up the most BS name for the guns they want to ban?
When ISIL does training videos that say the easiest way to get a combat assault weapon in the United States of America is at a gun show, then we should all be waking up.
Half truth at best. First, the guy who said that was an Al-Qaeda terrorist operating out of Pakistan, not ISIS. Let's listen to what he said exactly.
America is absolutely awash with easily obtainable firearms. You can go down to a gun show at the local convention center and come away with a fully automatic assault rifle without a background check and most likely without having to show an identification card. So what are you waiting for?
Yep, you can just buy a full auto rifle at the local gun show. Also, I dare anybody to buy a gun privately and not have the other guy at least ask to see their driver's license to make sure the transaction isn't across state lines. So yeah, a terrorist giving laughable advice is grounds for new laws. Also, I hope some of these radicals bent on doing me harm go try to buy machine guns at gun shows or at police stations.
Would you have them confiscated, the ones that are already here?
No, Martha, I would not. And that's not what we did in Maryland. But you know what we did in Maryland? We overcame the NRA's objections. We overcame all of the crowds that were coming down there. We did our own rallies. And at least if we enact these laws in a prospective way, we can address a major vulnerability in our country.
You know what he didn't do? Lower the crime rate. Go have a look at Baltimore. It's probably on fire right now. It really has been for the last 6 months on a fairly regular basis. Also adorable that you wouldn't go rounding up the guns. They didn't ask Hillary this, but she's on record wanting the Australian-style mandatory confiscation, which they like to spin as buybacks and bans on commonly owned guns. Cute, you don't want to do what she does, but you aren't going to win this.
And I'm glad to see this. Senator Sanders has really moved in face of the facts about what we're confronting in our country. I know that he has said in the two previous debates that he wants to take on this immunity issue because we need to send a strong message to the gun manufacturers, to the sellers, to the gun lobby. And I would hope, Senator Sanders, that you would join the Democrats who are trying to close the Charleston loophole, that you would sponsor or co-sponsor legislation to remove the absolute immunity. We need to move on this consensus that exists in the country.
Does anybody else get the feeling that Hillary is planning on buying off Bernie with an all-expense-paid staycation on the grounds of the U.S. Naval Observatory as her vice president? Just listen to that tongue bath. Come on, Bernie, just agree with me. Come over to the dark side. Let your anger flow.
Let the hate flow through you.
This Charleston loophole term is just crap. The hold that the shooter in Charleston was put on was an example of a broken system. The FBI may have been asleep at the switch, but there's also good evidence that the shooter was not a prohibited person. The minor drug crime he was accused of before the murders may not have been a prohibiting offense. It might have been, but no one really knows. But listen to the debate our leading Democrat candidate for president wants to have. If only a minor drug crime could turn a cash register into a mass murder prevention device. This is a completely broken system, and yet Hillary wants to put more power to it? Of course she does. She wants to ban and confiscate all the guns. And the immunity that gun companies have is non-existent. Under her husband's watch, anti-gun forces were leveling countless frivolous lawsuits against gun companies. The cases were all dismissed, but they cost the gun companies thousands of dollars to defend it. Do that often enough and they have to close their doors. This was the plan of the antis all along. That's why we fixed the glitch. Okay, I'll end on a light note.
The answer is obviously if you see suspicious activity, you report it. That's the kind of a no-brainer. You know, if somebody is loading guns and ammunition into a house, I think it's a good idea to call 911. Do it.
It's always fun to see people as stupid as Bernie Sanders saying no-brainer.
Kind of a no-brainer.
I also don't think that Bernie's smart enough to understand swatting, but that's what he's advocating. See somebody loading up for a trip to the range? Call 911. And feel free to use the word terrorist in the call. Yeah, great idea. In the end, the Democrats think of banning guns like teenage boys think of sex. And they're just as rational about it.
All right, Weird. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. My favorite is the whole, you can buy a fully automatic weapon at a gun show with no background check. That comes up so much, like on forums and whatnot that are unrelated to guns. So my standard thing is, okay, I'll tell you what. You think you can buy a full auto machine gun at a gun show or grenades or rocket launchers or whatever? You tell me where. I will fly out there. You pick me up. We'll go to the gun show. If we walk out of there with a full auto machine gun or a grenade or a rocket launcher or whatever, I'll buy it. We can then go to the ATF, turn it in, and then I will hand you a check for $10,000. But you have to pay to fly me out there. So I'm going to give you a check for $10,000 at the end of this. So that $500 ticket should be nothing, right?
Yeah.
Do you know how many times people have taken me up on that?
That would be zero.
That would be zero, right?
I've seen fully automatic machine guns at gun shows.
Oh, I have too.
And the price tag on them.
$16,000 for an M16?
I think it was actually in the $30,000 range. It wasn't $50,000. And it was an extremely rare Tommy gun. It wasn't like, you know, your average Tommy gun, which is just ridiculously expensive. It was right. An extremely rare version of a Tommy gun, which was beyond ridiculously expensive.
So I met a guy a couple of months ago who had just bought one for, I think, $45,000.
Right. Oh.
A Thompson. Yeah.
Stuff that grinds my gears. People who park randomly wherever the heck they feel like at the dog park.
Or anywhere, really.
Right, but it was at the dog park where I noticed this. Here's a clue. If you are at a location and they have painted lines on the ground in the middle of a big blacktop area, right?
Right.
And these lines on the ground are vaguely the same size and shape as an automobile, your car goes in between those lines.
That's not for the helicopters?
Unless it says H on it, no. If they have gone to the trouble to paint the lines, then your car goes over there. But if there's an expanse of pavement, whether it's black or maybe even cement, and there's no lines on it, then your car doesn't go there. I mean, it's probably not really that complicated. And so if you're so freaking lazy that you're going to take your dog to the dog park, I mean, you've gone to a significant amount of effort at this point. You have leashed your dog. You have walked your dog to the car. You have placed your dog in the car. Hopefully you have put a seatbelt on your dog. Now, I know a lot of you haven't, but I would consider putting a seatbelt on your dog when you put your dog in the car. That way, if you crash your car, probably not something that you have done, but somebody else has done, because you are a responsible person. You have not driven like an idiot. It's probably the other guy who drove like an idiot and crashed into you. Naturally, you drove perfectly well. You've never done anything wrong. Never you. Always the other guy.
Right.
So you put a seatbelt on your dog so that when they crash into you while you were driving perfectly fine and observing all of the rules, your dog doesn't fly into the back of your seat, get injured, and while you're recovering from the airbag deployment, your dog doesn't get mad and bite the cop and get shot because the cop's trying to rescue you and save you, and the poor injured dog doesn't know that the cop's not somebody attacking you. And then you've gone to all this effort. Do you think maybe it's a good idea to park your car where it belongs and walk maybe the extra 20 or 30 steps from where your car belongs instead of parking in the middle of where cars are supposed to drive? Do you think that's just too much to ask? I don't think it's too much to ask. Do you think it's too much to ask, Adam?
Well, apparently other people do.
Apparently. And those like two spots on either side of the center entrance that have handicapped placards. Yeah, that means your car has to have a handicapped placard too. That's for the old folks who are like too infirm.
Right.
Who have the handicapped placard, or injured folks who have a handicapped placard. Not for lazy folks who have the lazy placard. Okay, so stay the hell out of that. So the rest of you, you come down, park with me. That whole area in between, that's where people drive. So stay out of that. So how about you, Adam?
New Year's resolutions. I just think they're dumb. People are like, oh, what is your New Year's resolution? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Well, in 6 weeks, you're not going to know either.
I don't mind the resolution so much as the nosy people asking.
Well, yeah, I guess there's that. What is your New Year's resolution? Always ask them back. Well, what was yours for 2015? Well, I don't remember. It's like, okay, so whatever.
So what did you do on New Year's Day?
What did I do on New Year's Day?
It was yesterday.
It was yesterday. What did I do yesterday?
Our family tradition, which really comes from my mother, is that you live on New Year's Day the way you intend, because New Year's Day sort of sets the tone for the rest of the year.
Right.
Which is why you don't get blitzed on New Year's Eve and have a hangover on New Year's Day, because there you go. You've set the tone for the rest of the year. So on New Year's Day, you treat your wife well because you don't want to get in an argument with your wife and be a jerk to your wife because you've just set the tone for the year of being a jerk to your wife all year. So you try to treat your wife nicely.
Well, there you go.
You know, so how did you try to?
No, I was just being my normal self.
You treated your wife like a jerk?
Well, no, I just treated my wife like I normally treat her, which is probably like a jerk. I don't know. She'd probably.
No.
I don't know.
I've seen you. You treat your wife fairly nicely.
Well, somebody should tell her that.
I doubt that.
Growing up, I remember we always had to eat like black beans or something. My mom had like these weird ideas about good luck for the new year and, you know, oh, you have to eat this and this and this and this. I'm like, well, those foods are terrible. And not eating them doesn't appear to have any effect. So no, I'm not going to do that.
Well, that's our show for the week.
Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music.
And Firearms Policy Coalition for their support.
And thank you for listening to the Gun Blog Variety Cast.
Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com.
And hate mail to WizardPC at GunsCarsTech.com.
Like and share us on Facebook.
If you have Facebook.
And if you receive this podcast through iTunes, make sure to leave us a glowing 5-star review.
Show notes can be found at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode-72. We'll be right back.
This is a URS production.